ball spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Tuesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. So we got all kinds of different things going on today. College football playoff rankings week two will be announced later on this evening. Jared and I will talk about what we think might happen, differences in the first week to the second week, who should be there, who will be there. NFL this week, it was a wild week with different teams. The good teams look bad and the bad teams look good. So we'll hit that. Midseason MVPs, top five, bottom three. But first, we have the Elk City High School state-bound game day cheerleaders and coach in the studio today. We've got seniors Haley Grant, Macy McSparin, and Jamie Swartwood is the coach. Ladies, welcome.
Hi.
Okay, so we were talking off the air. And everybody, you know, you think of cheerleaders as the ones at the game pumping up the crowd and getting everybody involved. And that's kind of what you guys are doing in this competition. Go ahead and kind of tell us how a competition works. Macy, you're first.
Game day competition is just getting the crowd, like, worked up and really leading them. It helps to have a big support system, especially up in the stands to help yell with us, versus just a regular competition is mostly just stunts and tumbling. This one is just yelling and just making the judges like you.
So literally, the more people you can bring along to watch, the more it helps you with the energy and as you go.
Yes.
Haley.
Yes.
So I've got to think, just in preparing for this, so the better the teams are, like, during the games, I mean, outside of the competition, though, so the better our teams are, the more people are in the stands, the more it kind of helps you get ready to do that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what you kind of hit on the differences. So the game day is kind of like what fans are used to watching. The competition or the aerial, it's all the flipping and all that, like what you kind of got used to seeing on TV, I guess, at times in some of those things. So how do you prepare? Like, how do you prepare for these competitions? Haley.
We work really hard. We started our routine in, I think, July, and we've been just drilling it ever since. We've had to really work on our voice projection and how to really get the crowd involved, and it's a lot of hard work. We usually lose our voice halfway through practice, but we have to push through, and it's working. It's great.
Now, don't give away the secrets for the teams that might be listening here, but how did you kind of come up with what the routine is and then those different things to fine-tune it through the year?
We actually hired someone from a gym that some of our girls go to, and he really helped us. He helps with 6A schools, so a 4A school having a 6A routine is really important.
Okay, now, we see you lifting. Do you guys, what kind of conditioning do you go through throughout the year? Or is everybody just kind of naturally strong and that's the way it works?
Yeah, we do a lot of stunting, and that in itself is conditioning. And in our, well, we don't really have an off season, but summer and whatnot, we go to the weight room and we do a lot of jump drills, and that, like, strengthens the core. So, yeah,
people like think I'm kidding when I ask that question, but it's seriously, you have to be in way better shape than anybody realizes, because how long is this routine as in the competition? How long is your performance?
3 minutes.
See, so 3 minutes of running and jumping and lifting, and I'm already getting tired just yelling, thinking about
yelling,
it.
Yeah, straight yelling the whole time. Like, you don't stop yelling.
So what do you do to strengthen your voices? Because like you said, during practice, you kind of run out of it. I mean, it's hard to do that for that long.
We just drill it.
Yeah.
We do it over
we
and over.
We drill it over and over to get that endurance.
So you just continually working on it.
It's a lot easier this week.
Is it?
Yes, because it was hard last week.
Okay, so explain how like the playoffs work. See, last week was the regional competition.
Yes.
Y'all want me to take this?
Yeah, go ahead. We'll get Coach Swartwood in here.
So we go to regionals competition, and last week we only competed against other 4A schools. The there was 42 other teams in the 4A division alone. So we had to be they took the normally they only take the top 15 scores onto state. There was a tie last week, so they took 16, but we came out in seventh overall. So we got to move on to state, but. We do. We come on and we spirit on. We do our band dance routine, which is, we have a 1 minute time limit. And then in the regionals and prelims for state, we'll have an 8 count where we can kind of transition to our next routine. We're still on the floor. They say it's not a judge time, but I kind of think it really kind of, I think it is sort of for our overall impression. But so then we move into our crowd leading cheer, where that's where they really judge us on how we can get the crowd involved. We use props. We use signs that have their words that we want them to yell. We use the flags. We use megaphones. I mean, we palms that are, you know, color-coded. So, you know, if we're using a brown palm, we want you to yell brown kind of thing. So, and then after that, we'll have another 8 count to transition to into our fight song. And the fight song is, for us, I think, is the easiest routine that we've done so far because we've drilled it so much at games, but that's our last impression, so we have to end on a really solid note and hit it. And this year we've got a mascot that's like, I mean, we've always had mascots, but they're just kind of like volunteers every once in a while, but we brought in a girl, Natalie Pryor, who has been awesome and animated and really getting into her character. And I think that really helps as well. So after this week at state, we'll have our prelim round will be just like it was at regionals. And then if we place in the top six, then we get to move on to the finals round, which we'll have to do it all again, but they're going to throw in a situational cheer.
Okay.
And that they'll give us a prompt, like we'll do our band dance, and then they'll give us a prompt. After that, will be either an offensive prompt or a defensive prompt. And Miss Macy here understands football really good. I unfortunately don't. I've been to I don't know how many games in my life, and I still don't understand football. But she gets it. So she'll be the one that calls what cheer we do, and then we right into that. We go right in from our situational directly into our crowd leading cheer. So the finals round is really where it's going to show you if you've got the endurance to push through, because there's a lot of extra cheering and stunting in that routine as well.
So 15 was there more than one regional around the state, or
each class had their own regional.
Okay.
So all classes will be at state this next week, on Saturday this week, and then we'll find out from there, I guess.
Okay, so now it seems like, now I don't want to date myself, but when I was in high school, it seemed like Miss Sizemore just started becoming competition and like state championship crowning. It's been a while since we've been to state. Exactly how long has that been?
Me and the other coaches, Tiffany Shelton, Mandy Mason, and Rudy Burge, we're a great coaching team together, and we were actually trying to figure that out on the bus after regionals.
Yeah.
And we don't know an exact year, but we do know Debbie Sizemore was the last one. I think that took a group. But the game day competition itself is, like, OSSA has always had their other competitive one.
Right.
And that's the one that she took her group to. The game day is a relatively newer competition in Oklahoma. Other states have done it for a while, but Oklahoma didn't start it until probably about 2018. And we've gone to regionals every year, but this is our first time to make it to state.
So what she's saying is congratulations. You're the first ones. Fantastic. Okay, so it's 16. There was a tie. So there's 16 in just 4A.
Uh-huh.
Top six will be get to do basically two performances, and then that'll kind of weed out at the end.
Yes.
So now, are you going to have to watch extra film this week for offense, defense? I'm sure you understand the difference.
Yeah.
No, knowing who you kind of hang out with. okay, so either one of you planning on continuing this into college?
I'm trying to go to Oklahoma Baptist University for cheer.
Awesome.
She's been to several recruitments.
Macy's like shaking her head now. Now, are you going to be forced to wear the orange and black when you go to school?
Oh, yes. I will be wearing that. So, I actually got accepted there when we were eating after the competition. So I knew we were going to place because that's just good luck.
Oh, well, fantastic. That's great. Congratulations. Well, and congratulations to all you guys. First game day cheer squad ever at Elk City High School to go to the state competition. Where is state?
More, and we would more than appreciate as many people as we can get there.
Because, as you just said earlier, the more the merrier.
Yes.
Because the more people are wearing the brown and white, yelling with you, the better impression that you're going to make, and the easier it would be to win the state championship.
Yes.
So basically what we're saying here is, as soon as the football game is over at Cushing, just drive down, get you a hotel room, and go straight to Moore on Saturday. What time does it start?
It starts at, we perform at 2:30, but get there before 2:30, because if you are like 5 minutes late, you've already missed us and two other people perform, because it's only 3 minutes.
3 minutes worth. Where is it at in Moore?
The high school
at Moore?
Yeah.
Okay.
The 4A division specifically that we are up against will start at 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock for 4A. So now, I this doesn't seem very sporting, but if we had a bunch of people there booing everybody else, would that help?
That would not, unfortunately.
All right. Well, thank you all so much, Haley Grant, Macy McSparren, Coach Jamie Schwartwood. Congratulations and good luck on Saturday.
Thank you.
That is the Elk City High School cheerleader game day competition headed to the state finals on Saturday. Thank you, ladies. Thank you to those ladies coming in, Haley Grant, Macy McSparren, and also Jamie Schwartwood, the coach of the Elk City game day cheerleaders. First time ever they've made it to state in the game day cheering competition. It's only been around since like 2018, 2017, something like that,
okay.
They said. But it sounds, get there.
Let's
2 o'clock, it said be there by 2 at Moore. They're supposed to go on at 2:30. It's only a 3-minute routine, so you better be in your seat ready to go to help out those ladies.
That's great. You ever been to a game without cheerleaders?
No, but I can't imagine there would be a lot of energy in the stands.
No, they bring so much. It's, you know, a good cheer squad brings so much, and you could tell that from these ladies every Friday night.
They said it's a lot easier to bring that energy when the teams are good.
Well, of course.
I would imagine that would be true.
Of course.
I can see that being 100% true.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's great. I'm rooting them on.
You know what's not great?
Well, I can go on and on, but what?
What's not? What's not great?
Losing your fantasy football team. Wait, how did you do?
No, I'm a winner.
Me too.
I
scored the second most points this week.
I noticed that.
Pretty happy. I made some changes, but I think it's
too little,
too late.
I was gonna text the commish to ask him. I can't remember. You know, last year, in the payout, High Point got some money back, right? Whoever scored the most points for the year.
Oh, right.
And so I was going to text him and ask him if that was still in place or not, because I've seriously debated not playing the Steelers defense, just taking them out of the lineup.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I was ahead. Tyler didn't have anybody playing. He was done for the week. And I was already ahead, so why risk the Bears going crazy on the Steelers' defense and losing some points and losing the game?
I see.
See what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying.
But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, I need those many points as I can get, so I kept them in there. And it was looking like a great decision until about midway through the third quarter when Justin Fields turned into Ohio State Justin Fields, and the Bears started going up and down the field.
I got a little nervous. He was my only guy playing. I needed 7 points.
Yeah, and threw a pick early.
And it's third quarter, and I'm still losing. I'm like, what are you doing? All you got to do is show up, man. Show up and manage the game, and you're going to help me out. But, yeah, he finally turned it on there in the second half.
It was really – we mentioned this, it seems like, after every single Monday night or Sunday night or Thursday night game. The NFL has gotten so fortunate with the scheduling and just
the primetime
games have been so fantastic so far this year. You know, last night's game, it really kind of – and that's been the beauty of it, I think, if you're on the NFL side of this. There's been a whole bunch that seem like duds.
Yeah.
That have turned into fantastic games. That one last night was one of those. It, you know, the Bears have struggled on offense, you know, with a rookie quarterback. But, you know, I thought the guys on the coverage – Lewis Riddick and Brian Greasy did a really good job of pointing out as the game went along, and because you could see it happening, like the game slowing down for him and him starting to really read the defense and find the spots where the ball needed to go. And that also coincided with the Bears offensive line starting to give him a little bit of time to go through his progressions. And then all of a sudden you got to looking around thinking, man, the Steelers can't stop him.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing how that game flipped offensively for the Bears from the first half to the second half and the confidence that was gained from Justin Fields. And, you know, listen, the Bears fans, I saw a couple weeks ago when they were down in Tampa and it was just an absolute tail-kicking. Fields, he had that picture that, you know, they caught him on the bench where he just looked like a deer in headlights. You remember that one specific moment after he had turned the ball back over? And they flashed up a graphic on Fox where the game was, and it was like Tom Brady would be like third all-time in wins in the history of the Bears franchise just in the games he's won at Tampa or something crazy. I mean, it was nuts. Like, what? Just the futility at that position for the Chicago Bears franchise is almost unrivaled.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And even when they had a good one with McMahon, he was a weirdo. You know, and Jay Cutler was a little bit the same way. But it does look like they may have found something with Justin Fields after last night. Now, we got to talk about, man, right there, that there was some crazy series for the officials. I thought John Perry, the former official that was up in the booth doing the review thing, he was spot on a lot of his analysis for me. When Marquise Goodwin made that long catch, and the ball squirted out when he hit the ground, I immediately went, oh, that's going to be an incompletion. Dez caught it, but it didn't count, right?
Right.
And so, but then when he showed it, now he didn't have it in his hands, but it was like in his finger and on his wrist, and the ball literally never moved. And John Perry said it. He goes, listen, guys, that ball's in his fingers, and his fingers are stronger than you realize. Yeah. And look at the ball. It does not move. He takes about 4 or 5 steps. And as soon as that happens, that he doesn't have to finish the process. And sure enough, that was the call. But then they get down there on the goal line on that same series. Chicago throws a touchdown pass. It was Fields to Cole Kmet. Looks like they're right back down a touchdown. And all of a sudden, the phantom outside block call happens. And, you know, Perry's like, whoa, he didn't even touch him first off. And it was inside the tight end, you know. So that one happens. And then they get down for the Steelers, hit the quarterback twice, one on a slide, one on the third down play, where Highsmith takes 2 steps and just belts Justin Fields. Matt Nagy is about to chew his headset up, and it doesn't get called. And then, of course, at the end, or in the fourth quarter, on the phantom taunting call that, honestly,
what was that?
I saw a video where Corenti kind of sticks his butt out to make contact
with
Marsh, throws the flag.
Yeah, that's all over the place.
And you're like, what is he doing? And oh, by the way, in a 2-point game, that allowed the Steelers the yardage to kick another field goal. I mean, give credit to Chris Boswell. They had that stat as they were preparing for the last field goal or the last drive. He's the only kicker ever to hit 2 from 50 in the same game at Heinz Field. You know, and that's been a place that's always been hard to kick at, just because there's an open end and all that kind of stuff, and the winds get swirling. So kudos to him. But my gosh, it felt like Tony Corenti. I mean, he's not out there betting on the Steelers, but it felt like he might have been, just with the way that all the calls just happened to go against the Bears. And I wonder. I mean, that a couple of those clearly influenced the outcome of that game. Now, I'm not sitting here telling you that's why the Bears lost, but it certainly had an effect on the outcome. It doesn't seem like there are consequences, so I guess my question is, why not? Why aren't there consequences? Because you'll see Tony Corenti later on in, like, the divisional playoff round.
Yeah.
Reffing a game. And that can't happen then. It really shouldn't happen now. So what are the why aren't there consequences? It doesn't feel like there are, right?
No, there should be. The New York should look at the tape and evaluate their officials. You know, go listen to, on everything, not just stuff like that, but like, okay, you called a holding in the first quarter, and it appears that he wasn't holding. He let go, and, you know, it didn't, you know, stuff like that, little check marks here, just, you know, and then send the tape or send the critique back to the official. Go, this is what you need to work on. You got graded a 98% correct call night or something like that. But stuff like that, too. Go, listen, this, you shouldn't have thrown that flag at all. That is a, that's a big red mark, and this is going to affect where we throw you at in the postseason.
100%.
Not hard. I think coaches, don't they send in evaluations after every game? Or I think there is a process like that. So, yeah, but you're right. But you'll see them in a championship game, AFC, I mean, or NFC.
Yeah, we all know that is kind of in place, but it doesn't feel like it's used.
It's not used, yeah, right.
There's no repercussions whatsoever.
It's just to calm people down, go, oh, well, we do have this process. Well, you're not using it right. You're not.
We're not even using it.
No.
Well, it just goes back to the NFL is just all powerful. And you know, Goodell is the judge, the jury, and the executioner on all things. Yeah. And so, but it was just pretty egregious last night on some of that stuff that, you know, and I think part of the problem for those guys, especially on that taunting call, is the fact that they implemented the rule. What a ridiculous rule. And the last thing that those guys need, those guys being the officials, is for people like us or the entire, you know, viewing community being able to criticize them for more judgment calls, because that's all that is a judgment call. And one week it is, one week it isn't, one crew it is, one crew it isn't, you know. And that goes, that's the same thing with the roughing the passer stuff. I mean, every single week you see something happen and you go, what?
Yeah,
roughing the passer. I mean, and
did that happen on Sunday?
On Sunday in the Cleveland and Cincinnati game, I actually saw him call roughing the passer from, like, the booth. So the play happens. I think Cleveland was tackling Burrow. And they tackle him as he – it wasn't a sack, but they, you know, they're tackling him as he threw it away.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're lining up to snap it, and all of a sudden the whistles blow, like 30 seconds after the play. And they throw the flag. And so that has to be coming from some sort of replay, because it's not coming from the officials on the field, because
yeah,
they stop, they talk, and then they both lay down the flags at the same time. So why is that happening there when, I mean, listen, Highsmith literally, not even in the sissified rules, not only was it in the sissified rules that's roughing the passer, that was roughing the passer in 1985.
Right.
You know, you're taking two blatant steps and just belting the quarterback in the back. That's always been rough. You know, that doesn't have anything to do with everything getting less contact. That's always been that way. So where was the eye in the sky then?
Yeah.
Because they showed that replay. I mean, Nagy's going nuts, and you're not 100% sure why the way that play ended. And then they go back and they show it two or three times before the field goal happens. So if that's available to the officials at Cincinnati, where were they in Pittsburgh? I mean, because that's like textbook. So a lot of it is just so subjective, and you don't even know. And that puts the officials in a bad spot.
The LA Tennessee game, you know, Aaron Darnold got flagged for ref. You see that one? He had two. Is two below, man. It was just, he just touched him, and he goes out of bounds, and then Tannehill suddenly turns into a rag doll and falls out of bounds. Yeah, it's so subjective. It's ridiculous at times.
But that's where what you were talking about earlier, the officials making those calls, right or wrong, ought to have a consequence
a checks and balance, yes, after the game, and go, well, okay, you know, a grading system, and listen, you got to, hey, man, you're in the 90 percentile of getting your calls right during that game. Good job. Or, whoa, you got around an 82. You need to look, here's what you got wrong, you know? I mean, you think anybody in any profession wants to do their job correctly and do it great. I mean, I'm
sure
constantly, every day, trying to get better at what I do. You'd think officials would want that, too. I want people to critique me. I hate it. It gives me bubble guts, but I take it, and I try to make myself better. You'd think officials would want that too.
I think they do. But it's one thing to critique them. It's another to actually use that critique when choosing officials for later on, when the games really, really matter in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's the part that it doesn't seem like happens.
No, it doesn't seem like it's working.
Sure, there's a grading system, but there's no consequences to that system, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And last night was just a crazy night. It just kind of fell into the way that this week went, right? I mean, I had that stat yesterday First time since 2006 in the NFL where five teams that were at least 5-point underdogs won games outright. The good teams look bad and the bad teams look good. I mean, there's no way to explain what happened in Jacksonville. How in the hell did the Jaguars beat the Bills? It doesn't make any sense. How in the world was Dallas down 30-0 to Denver?
Right.
You know, yeah. And then you kind of get why Green Bay happened against Kansas City. Those two teams were kind of going in opposite directions, but Aaron Rodgers wasn't there, and so you know that one makes a little bit more sense. The Rams, you know, they were just physically manhandled by the Titans, and so when you look around, you know, it makes no sense that Atlanta went to New Orleans and won. You know, how did the Giants beat the Raiders? I mean, it's just I think this is the entire idea of the NFL is for the most parity possible. And at any given week, I mean, it's just such a cliche, but it's absolutely true. At any given week in that league, any team can beat any team. It's just the truth.
Yeah.
And when you see it all converge multiple times in the same week, you kind of look around and go, what is going on?
It happens. But that's why I think the NFL is one of the best leagues, because of the parity. Because you can't just roll in and, you know, you're taking on a one-win team, Jaguars, and think you're just going to coast and win. These are still pros. They're, you know, these are guys who are playing at the next level for a reason. So I like it. I like the parity.
Yeah, and I think – you know, when you look,
I had a feeling going into the Dallas game. Something.
When
told
you look
me,
at yeah. teams, though, I mean, Denver's done a bad team. They're 5-4. It's not, you know, it's not like the worst team in the league, like Jacksonville beating Buffalo.
Right.
But it wasn't the fact that Dallas lost the game. It was how 30-0. You can't move the ball.
Yeah.
When you think about everything that happened surrounding Denver, traded away Von Miller. Bradley Chubb's not playing on the defensive line. Then during the game, they lose both tackles. So they were down to basically the end of the bench on the offensive line. Sertan went out during the game, and they still just ramrodded the Cowboys all the way up and down the field. It was just Dallas didn't show up. It was that plain and simple.
Yeah.
Denver did, and Denver killed them. I mean, that's just the way that game went. All right, what do you got for a what do you got for a top five and a bottom three?
Oh boy, you go. You go first.
All right, top five. I have Arizona 1. I was tremendously impressed. I mean, listen, San Francisco hasn't been what anybody thought, including me, of what anybody thought they would be. But without Kyler, without DeAndre Hopkins, Colt McCoy just eviscerated the San Francisco defense. So I've got Arizona 1 because here was my. I've had them 3-4 most of the year, even though they were undefeated, the last undefeated standing. And a big part of that was what's going to happen when Kyler can't play, because it feels like that's an inevitability at some point each NFL season with his stature and his style of play. He's going to end up missing some games. So then what happens? So far, so good. As Arizona looked awesome in that win out in San Francisco. I've got them 1. I've got Tennessee 2 for now after what they did to the Rams, which was a team I had in the top 3, I think, last week. They just physically dominated that game. Now, the reason I say for now is they're going to have to figure out something offensively. They cannot continue to account for less than 200 yards of offense in a game and win. Now, they were able to the other night because they got an interception on the 2-yard line and a pick 6. Well, that kind of alleviates some of those offensive woes. But for now, after that performance, I got Tennessee 2, Tampa 3. I've got Green Bay 4. I thought Green Bay played awesome against Kansas City, defensively especially. I thought that was one of the most – behind the Tennessee defense, I thought the Green Bay defense might have been the most impressive thing about the entire weekend, the way that they frustrated Mahomes. I mean, we know that offense has struggled and had some problems throughout the year. But, man, Green Bay's defense had them in a position to win that game when they had no reason to, because Jordan Love struggled so bad offensively. But that Green Bay defense kept on answering the bell to where, you know, it took a Mahomes third down conversion to keep them off the field to go try to win the game. So I got Green Bay 4. Then I've got Baltimore 5. They keep on pulling these games out of their behinds. Down 14 to Minnesota the other day, came back and won. So I've got Baltimore 5 with Dallas, with Buffalo, you know, those teams dropping out this week?
Yeah, I'm similar. What you said about the Cardinals, I agree with that one at number one. I got Tampa Bay at number two. I know they were off this last week, but I think that's
it was a good thing to be off this last week.
That's dangerous. I think they'll come back focused and ready to go. Tennessee, mentioned it yesterday, say it again, it was the most impressive win from the weekend, was being L.A. Everybody was putting dirt on them with the Henry injury, and they still show that they can still move the football. Green Bay, I'm with you on about everything you said about Green Bay. And instead of Baltimore, I like Baltimore, but I think the Dallas loss in a weird way could be a good loss, you know, and have them focus up too. I still have them in my top five. Barely, though. I mean, if there is a 5A and 5B, it'd be Dallas or Baltimore, Baltimore or Dallas. Take your pick.
What week nine just completed last night, so they're really getting a halfway point this year because they're 17 weeks. But if you have, you know, halfway midseason MVP, who would that be?
Halfway season MVP. Great question. Because a lot of it is still the usual suspects. I might say Rodgers. I'm trying to talk myself out of it, though. I mean, you know, I love Kyler to begin the year. And I mean, look, they're 8-1.
Yeah, but like, I think it's interesting you said Rodgers because I thought you were going to say Brady. But you say Rodgers, and I think his MVP candidacy was definitely strengthened this last week.
With him not on the
field. With him not on the field.
You think him on the field, that's a win.
100%.
Going away, right?
You get to see his greatness when he's not there.
Yeah.
And on the flip side of that, how much does that hurt Kyler? When Colt McCoy can just come off the bench and just smoke San Francisco the way that they did. I don't know that that's going to be the deciding factor later on down, but at least for that one week, it was pretty interesting with a couple of the guys neither there, both in the running, and you're looking around going, wait a minute. Roger?
One could argue if the Titans got blown out, then say, well, Derrick Henry clearly was the best player in this league. Without him, they're nothing, but that's not the case.
The guy on the other side, I think Matthew Stafford's going to be involved. He didn't have a very good game the other night. He's there. Brady's there. And then, you know, but it seems, you know, a couple of the guys weren't there. A couple of the guys that were at the top of that list struggled. Dak struggled. You know, it was just a strange week for all that. But I think I would go with Brady. As crazy as that sounds.
That's not crazy.
I think right now I'd go with Brady. With Kyler nipping at his heels, though. Kyler Murray's been incredible this year. But he's got to be able to stay on the field. That's always the problem for him.
If he can end his season like he has started his season, yes, I'm right there with you.
It's going to be one of the best calls of all time. Because that's who you had preseason.
I don't know if that – I mean, I just looked at past MVPs and past players who are young in the league who are coming up on contract years, who are looking to get paid, and you suddenly see them just take it to the next level. And Kyler's just such a cool cat. I'm just looking for him to take it to the next level in the NFL. So, I mean, I don't know what the greatest call, just going by probability of how I think he would progress.
Had a question on the text line. I think this is super interesting. And I don't know, just off the top of my head, I have no idea what the answer to this question is. But I think it's a great one. What can the NBA do to mirror the NFL for competitiveness of the smaller markets? Because when you think of the NFL, it doesn't make a damn where you're at. Right?
Yeah.
We've seen anybody and everybody be good, no matter the market. And we've seen anybody and everybody be bad, no matter the market.
Right.
You know, there's literally not an advantage to where you're at. And just off the top of my head thinking about it, I wonder, gosh, because, you know, that's a consideration, like location, not necessarily just – for living, But, you know, one of the things you always hear the NBA people talking about, when I say people, I mean like the media folks. You always hear them talking about, like, state tax as a consideration for some of these guys in the NBA. Florida doesn't have it. So Miami becomes even more attractive than they would be. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Situations like that. That's something you never hear brought up in the NFL circles, ever.
No.
And I wonder if it's because, okay, you know there's this much money guaranteed. I mean, it's a bunch of money for all of them. It doesn't matter. But you know what those guarantees are in the NBA. You know it's going to be over $100 million. So, whereas I don't know if anybody really understands the contracts that are in the NFL. You know what I mean? There's all those bonuses and that contribute to that whole number. But when you first hear that number, a lot of times that's not what they get paid. You know, and so I think maybe that's part of it. But just the structure of the thing. The NFL, to me, is built around parity. And it's built around teams. Whereas the NBA is built around stars. And I think it goes all the way back to the early 1980s when David Stern kick-started that league and took it to heights that maybe nobody even thought were possible by putting Magic Johnson and Larry Bird as out front of the NBA versus the teams. Now, you know, L.A. Boston became a thing, but it only became a thing because of Magic and Larry. And then one of the most fortunate things of all time was to have that model and then have Michael Jordan come right on the footsteps of Magic and Larry to take it to a whole nother level than no one really thought was possible. So I think part of it is just that structure of the NFL markets the league and teams versus the NBA marketing stars out front.
Yeah, that's a better model in my eyes, right?
Well, because the stars are going to gravitate towards the markets,
right?
The certain markets. And so, you know, you look at a team like Oklahoma City in the NBA, they've got no shot to get, what, a top 50 free agent? Like, if all the best 50 players are free agents, they wouldn't have a shot at any of them. In the NFL, guys gravitate toward the teams that need them, and they don't care where they're at, right?
Right.
Where would I be best suited to win? But, and there's more guys. I mean, you know, there's 53 versus 15. So, you know, you can't really cater to eight guys in the NFL because there's thousands and thousands more, you know, in the player pool, whereas it's just a couple hundred when you're talking about NBA. So I think the style is a big part of it, and just the way that one guy can influence – so much more in basketball than they can in football.
Right. And I wish the NBA would get back to those. You kind of made me sad when you mentioned the, you know, the Lakers in Boston days of the late 80s, and those were fun times. And now I'm just so, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Divided or pushed away by the NBA of what the product we have now.
Well, the problem is, I mean, Magic and Larry are buddies, but they didn't want to lose to each other.
Well, sure.
And they were damn sure never going to play with each other.
Exactly.
I mean, what Kevin Durant did, leaving here, going to Golden State, would have been akin to the early 90s or late 80s, early 90s, to Michael Jordan losing to the Pistons a couple times and going, hey, I'm going to Detroit.
Right.
Think of the difference in his legacy if that happened.
Oh, yeah.
Instead, it was the exact opposite. I'm not going to Detroit. I'm beating those guys. I'm figuring out a way to beat those guys. It was just a different mindset back then.
Yeah.
And I think not everybody's buddies now.
Right.
Except for Jokic. My God, did you see what he did last night?
Yeah.
Now that.
I kept waiting for the ding, ding, ding. That's end of round one or whatever quarter it was. My goodness.
Now that was roughing the passer.
That was the Detroit of old days.
Yes. Don't mess with Jokic. I started earlier to tell you what one of the worst things to do is, and I never really got there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What is that?
One of the worst things you can do, Jared, is to make 7 of the 10 picks in the Western Oklahoma Realty Pick'em contest, and the 3 you forgot to make were the 11 o'clock games. I almost texted you. If I wouldn't have been driving, don't drive and text, kids. If I wouldn't have been driving when I realized, oh my gosh, I forgot to make those first 3. I was going to text you Nebraska, North Carolina, and Ole Miss. Because that's who I was going to pick.
Those are all winners.
They were all winners.
Yeah.
They were all winners. See, I don't forget to make picks when they were losers. Of course, they'd have been losers anyway. But it just really kind of hurts when I was finally going to have a good week. I was looking staring 7-3 in the face.
Yeah, and
I forgot to make the picks.
I noticed you dropped.
I'm on the second page.
You are, yeah.
I've made it to the second page.
I'm creeping to the top 20. Creeping.
Instead of sitting there, instead of me sitting there at number 20, which is where I would be with three additional wins, I am down the list at 34. Johnny Rep has taken the lead by 2 over Andy Pfeffer. Possum in the top 5. That's a sure sign the favorites have been winning if Possum's in the top 5. Anyhow. Oh, by the way, you know whose birthday it was over the weekend?
Possum's?
Nope.
Oh, who?
Tyler Harrison's at Western Oklahoma Realty. People Before Property, we appreciate them being involved in the contest again this season.
I think his birthday cake was a pumpkin pie.
Are you being serious?
Kind of, actually.
Oh. I mean, I'm seeing what you did there.
I'm halfway serious, yes.
Yeah, I wonder, because, you know, the pumpkin mom is his wife, Amber. It raises thousands of pound pumpkins.
Right.
You know, in the FFA stuff, you know, the kids have the animals, and they raise them, and they show them, and then all of a sudden they have to, you know, at the end, what happens? They go bye-bye.
Yeah.
I wonder if Tyler's kids won't eat pumpkin pie because of that.
Because they grow
the pumpkins, and they're thinking, I love this giant. And it take. Of course, he's got about 8 kids, so they can like have their hands around each other and maybe stretch clear around the pumpkin to give it one big hug. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because one of them can't do it because it's a giant pumpkin. Anyway, I wonder if that happens as it's time for the pumpkin to go away. If the whole family just holds hands and like hugs the giant pumpkin
before they take it to the. Before they, slaughter.
Put it, before they put it in the pie. What do they do with that pumpkin when it's
gone? I'm surprised you don't know. You got to ask him.
I was hoping he was listening so he could tell us. Anyway, thank you to Robbie Allen, Tyler Harrison. Happy birthday, Tyler. Western Oklahoma Realty. People Before Property is their motto. They can do everything real estate. All your needs right there at Western Oklahoma Realty. All right, college football playoff. Second week of rankings will come out tonight. Do you think it's going to be one of those situations where the order stays fairly similar? So, like, you know, Wake Forest will drop below Oklahoma State, so that makes Oklahoma State go up 1. Michigan State might drop below OU, makes them go up. You think that's the way it's going to be? Like, okay, this team lost, like it is in the polls. It feels like the AP poll or the coaches poll. They kind of slot whoever lost, and then everybody kind of just steps up 1. You think the committee's going to view it like that, or do you think it'll be a lot more fluid throughout this time?
I think it'll be more fluid. I do. I don't think it's as cut and dry as an AP poll or even coaches poll based on wins and losses. They've shown that to us a week ago, that it's more of an eye test thing. You would hope they stick with that, because there's some teams in my vision did not pass the eye test. Ohio State stands out. They struggled with Nebraska late in that game until they're able to pull away. Look what Tulsa was doing to Cincinnati. Some would argue he actually got in before he fumbled.
Sure looked like it.
And so if eye test matters, then that I think is going to move the rankings a little bit more than say what wins and losses would do.
I would agree with that. I just don't know how. You know, this would have been a good week for, you know, Michigan to play somebody good and win and look good at it. Mm-hmm. It's been a good week for OU to be playing Baylor this last week and look good winning against number 12 at the time, to where maybe that benefits you more this week. Problem is, for me, I want it to be more fluid, but everybody struggled. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah. Bama beat a horrible LSU team by 6 on their home field. Oregon struggled to death with Washington. You mentioned Ohio State, Cincinnati, and Tulsa. So, you know, those teams that were below Georgia, I mean, I honestly think it's Georgia. And the next 7 to 10, just mix them up in a hat and pull them out.
Sure.
As far as what the order is. Who do you think benefits the most? If we're right in that it won't just be cookie cutter, move somebody up, who do you think benefits the most with it being more fluid? This week specifically.
For just this week?
Uh-huh.
If we're looking at if I'm looking at my top six as it was, we're about to unveil, then I'd have to say, in an odd way, Oklahoma, because they didn't play, so they didn't lose. And then there's, like we said, you know, we had a top three team lose, and then we had other teams struggle above them. I think that actually helps them out a little bit.
I think the team that gets benefited more, and they may not show up in the top six, but I think they're going to be able to jump a couple of people they wouldn't have normally been able to jump. OSU.
Yeah.
With the way that they strangled West Virginia.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're 10 in the AP, 10 in the coaches. If it's just cookie cutter, they're for sure 10 with Wake Forest dropping behind them. Maybe 9, depending on what the committee views as Michigan State's loss as. But I think Oklahoma State's going to end up right behind Oklahoma.
Okay.
I think those two are going to be back to back in the rankings. I think OSU jumps Notre Dame and falls right behind OU.
As much as I want that to happen, I don't think it will. I want it to happen. It's hard for me to see him jump Notre Dame because it's, come on, Notre Dame.
Yeah, well, I think it's going
to
happen.
I hate to say it like that, but it is what it is.
Okay, first, how do you think the top six will look? And the second one will be, how would you have it? So how do you think it's going to look tonight when it's unveiled by the committee?
Well, it's very similar, though. That's my problem.
Well, go ahead.
How I think it'll look, I think, is how I think they'll do it. Georgia, Alabama, 1 and 2. I don't think that changes. Now, obviously, we're going to have some changes because Michigan State lost. I think that propels Oregon up to 3. Ohio State right behind them. They're going to keep Oregon above Ohio State because of the head-to-head. Cincinnati at 5. And then I think OU does jump up to 6. I think they get in that 6, and Michigan's right behind them around 7 if we keep going that way.
Okay. I've got almost exactly the same. I think it's going to be Georgia, Bama, Oregon, Ohio State, Cincinnati. I've got Michigan ahead of OU, Oklahoma State, Notre Dame. What would your top 6 look like?
I just told you.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Actually, omit that. I think I go back now. I don't see them jumping OU over Michigan, so I'll put Michigan at 6.
So you want it to be fluid, but you think it's going to be cookie cutter.
Yeah, I want it to be fluid. But
where does Michigan State fall to?
If OU had played this week, it looked good playing, then they have the ability to jump a Michigan.
Where's Michigan State?
Or even a Cincinnati, with the way Cincinnati struggled with Tulsa.
Where do you think Michigan State will be?
That's the question. That's the question of the night. Does the committee have enough faith in them to keep them in the top 10, knowing that they still got a big game with Ohio State coming up? You know, they're not out of this race yet, so we don't need to drop them out of the top 10. I think they do stay in the top 10, but I just don't know where. Maybe around the 9 mark?
That's good. That one's going to be
– knock off Wake Forest. They're done.
That's right.
D-U-N. As Jim famously says.
Yeah.
Done.
I think
so. They're out of the top 10. But Oklahoma State definitely deserves to be in the top 10. But somebody's going to have to pay the price of keeping Michigan State in the top 10. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, OSU could be – Michigan State and OSU can both be in the top 10.
Okay.
Because Wake Forest falls.
Wake Forest is out.
So they're not taking, OSU isn't taking Michigan State's spot. They're taking Wake Forest's spot. You know what I mean?
Right. So if Michigan State stays in the top 10, who's out? Notre Dame?
Wake Forest.
No, if we're putting number 11 Oklahoma State inside the top 10, mm-hmm. Wake Forest out.
Okay, boom, that's it. Everybody else is still the same.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Michigan State doesn't have to fall. Yeah, yeah. Michigan State can stay in because OSU would take Wake Forest's spot, if that makes sense.
I'll put them at 9, OSU at 9.
I think it's going to be interesting to see where Michigan State is because how much does Purdue's win over Iowa save them a little bit?
Right.
Like, it's not just you. They right. did it to somebody else. I also think one thing that's so underrated.
What if Purdue goes and beats Ohio State?
Well, yeah, then there's chaos. Yeah. One thing that is underrated about these rankings, that they're kind of throwaways, but it ends up making a difference in the committee's eyes, which is really sad because they're the ones that are putting them there. But the teams at the back end, meaning, okay, how far for Oklahoma and Oklahoma State specifically, how far does Baylor fall? Does Iowa State get into the top 25?
Right.
Which they absolutely should be, but they're not right now. You know, and so then the reason being, when it gets down to the end, what is one of the biggest arguments in favor of those SEC and Big Ten schools? Well, look at their schedule. They beat all these good teams that are ranked in the bottom of the top 25. I mean, he had Minnesota at 20 last week. Give me a break. They lost, and then they went out and lost Illinois.
Yeah, see ya.
So, that you know what I'm saying? But that's how they're boosted up. When you look at the rankings, the highest-ranked one-loss team is always SEC. Next is Big Ten. The two-loss team, highest-ranked, is always SEC. Next, Big Ten. Three, you know, and down the line, right? And that props those wins up. Artificially, almost with those rankings that the committee makes themselves. So I would be looking, if you're OSU and OU fans, not only where you're at, where's Baylor? How far does Baylor drop? They were 12th. Does anybody in their right mind think that if that was, I don't know, Wisconsin or Mississippi State or one of those, that they fall out of the top 25? Of course not. But will Baylor?
That's hard for me to see.
I don't think there's any way they're dropping clear out.
I see them around 17 or 18.
That would be sufficient. I wouldn't be shocked if they were in the 20s.
Mississippi State lose. You had Kentucky lose 17, 18.
And
you mentioned Minnesota.
Minnesota
needs to get out of there. Fresno State, you're done. Get out of there. You lost to Boise State and wasn't even close. So there's openings there. So I could see Baylor being in that 17, 18, 19 range. Iowa State. They should be in.
Iowa State's still not ranked in the AP or the coaches.
There's no trust there. There's no trust.
Auburn went down 2 at 6-3. Anyway, we'll see if it happens. The problem's going to be maybe the only way that Iowa State gets in the poll is to beat Oklahoma, and then all this is moot.
Yeah.
It'll be fun to see how the committee looks at what happened over the weekend. Or because everybody struggled, does everybody just kind of stay the same spot? We'll talk about it tomorrow. Everybody have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow right here on 98.1.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.